Anyway, so, Master Moody, let me start with you. You and I haven't had a bunch of one-on-one calls, including with everybody on the line right now and everybody who's still dialing in or going to listen to the replay. What are some of the common issues that you've come across in the last couple of weeks with schools, including perhaps with we have Jeff Anderson, Jan Lappin, Marty Callahan, Robert Finby, Lauren Davidson, Jeff Dalal, Jay, am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
My last name is Gallo.
Gallo, okay. I apologize for that.
That's okay. You're switching the first name and the last name. My first name is Jalal, but everybody calls me Jay, and then the last name is Gallo.
There you go. You know, I have found if I don't correct it early, people get stuck with it for years. So I try to get it right early on.
No worries. Thank you, sir.
And Master Moody, you were always the recipient, too, because we had Greg Moody and Doug Mooney. And somehow I always switched last names or first names between the two of you. And then Thomas Wright and Carol Middleton and Al Ciccarello so far, and a few others that are there I know are on their way. But Master Moody, what specific issues have you come across in your one-on-ones with anybody in the call or any of the inner circle people performers the last couple of weeks that merits discussing for everybody briefly?
Well, maybe a little bit of time on scheduling, because what we found sometimes is we were doing the sales, the system seemed okay, everything was all right, but when we looked at the class schedule, it was like impossible for the students to do the classes unless they came in 3 or 4 days a week. For example, the schedule was set up so leadership is on Friday at 6:30, and then for preschool kids, their class would be at 4 o'clock on one day and on Tuesday at 4 o'clock on another. So they had, if they joined leadership, they'd have to come in more days. And setting the schedule up so that they minimize the total number of days that they have to come in is kind of important. I mean, that limits your sales if automatically the students can't make classes.
Absolutely.
It's not an easy thing to fix, but it's something that, if we try to make the schedule simplistic, it usually doesn't solve the problem. That's something I've talked to a few people about this week. The other thing is, simply in the sales process, slowing down and making sure that we explain things well, because I think everybody, should understand that if people are confused, they won't buy. Whether your sales are good or cheap or expensive, it doesn't matter. If they're confused, they won't buy. So simplicity, making sure the schedule works for people and making sure that we communicate clearly.
Yeah, and let me address the second point first. It is so important. Is you've got to write that down and drill it into all of your staff. Is what weak salespeople and communicators have a tendency to think is they have to give people all of the details in order for them to make an informed decision. And the reality is you need to give them enough detail in order for them to be comfortable making the decision, but no more. And, in sales jargon, there was a great movie, I think it was Tin Men. It's all about siding salesmen, and there's a line in there where the grizzled old experienced sales trainer is taking the newbies around, and at one point, on the top of a mountain somewhere, he yells at the kid, "God damn it, you sold it, don't buy it back." And I see a lot of, especially why I don't like hiring people who think that they're salespeople, because so many times what they think they're good at is talking people into things. And, it's my opinion, you never talk anybody into anything. You give them an emotional reason to be excited. You give them enough facts that they can justify it. And then you get out of the way and let them make a decision. And so it's so important. And it's where the longer, more complicated the sales process is, a lot of times you're ending up working your way out of the sale. A lot of times you end up over-explaining, and then it ends up leading to them asking an awful lot more questions about how things work, and usually it ends up with they end up confused, and a confused prospect does nothing. So it's a very important consideration, and you always want to look at that. What else would you add?
Go ahead. Well, I was gonna follow up with that a little bit. Let me give a specific example that may be relevant for everybody. Is the materials you show people when one of the examples we had, they're not on the call today here, but one of the examples we looked at was a sales sheet, you know, where they were presenting price, and they put, you know, the testing fees, and they put their family member, if they had one family member, it was this much, if they had two family members, this much, if they paid in full, it was this much, and all that stuff was on the sheet, and the guy was trying to argue with me and say, well, yeah, but we have to explain all that to him. I'm like, yeah, but you don't have to explain it all at once. And the counter of that was, he goes, well, but I do have to tell him sometime. And I go, yeah, but you don't tell him, the other side of that, and you should always think about it this way, if you were really going to reveal everything, if we were going to tell them everything they were going to buy, they would say, we'd say, well, you know, if you're going to make it to black belt, you're going to buy a bunch of gear, you're probably going to spend about, you know, $1,000 a year on clinics, you might decide to go to tournaments, and the airfare for tournaments is going to be this much, and it's going to be this much to drive there. You might spend about $1,000 on gas. Probably to get your black belt, it's going to cost you about $20,000. You could add up all that stuff for them, but we don't do that. So instead, it should be just enough information, as Master Oliver said, and also consider the order at which you give them the information to get a yes. So, you know, here's the program. These are the features and benefits. Does that sound good to you? Which one sounds better? Yes. Then we say, well, there's a couple of different pricing options. Here's the pricing option, and which one's better? Yes. And then here's if you'd like to pay it in full, you can save this much money. Yes. So taking it step by step so that it doesn't confuse people, not just volume of information, but the order of the information is going to be really important. So that's something, if we do our one-on-one calls to review maybe your sales sheets or what you're showing people, might be important so it gives the right message in the right order without overwhelming them.
Absolutely. And you already said it, but I'll reiterate it, is that if they make one decision at a time, never ask them to make a compound decision. Do you want to do this, and do you want to do this? Do you want to do this? I mean, you want to be one decision at a time, and then you move forward, right? And so what a lot of those, like those sales presentation sheets that you're talking about, Master Moody, is all of a sudden they have 10 pieces of information that they have to absorb all at the same time, and oftentimes it's, they have to make two or three decisions at once. And it's again, you make them make two or three different decisions at once. And then all of a sudden what happens is they get confused and they don't make any decisions. And if you're getting a lot of, we're going to go home and think about it. You know, I mean, everybody in the call that shit enough to know they don't go home and think about anything, right? Really, that means they're confused. Take that as a request for more information. And, you know, if anybody needs it, there's a script stolen directly from Tom Hopkins 101 on how to handle it when you get to there. But usually what I find is when you get to that point, it's mostly about, you know, you've gotten them confused. And if you don't get them unconfused, what they're saying is you're not going to do anything because they're just leaving the sales process confused. So that's a really good point. You know, it is a slightly side topic. I was talking to my friend Don Southerton, who works heavily in the car industry, and specifically works a lot with Kia and their dealership networks and Hyundai and so forth. And he had an interesting stat from the car dealership. And what he was saying in that sales environment, of course, their sales environment is a little bit different than ours. But one of the things that I thought was interesting, probably had some actual ability, is he would say the closing rates are going up dramatically when the presentation is done on something like an iPad rather than like in handwritten form or on a piece of paper. And I thought that was interesting. So whether it's a PowerPoint or something like that, they're saying, especially when it comes to pricing, if you show them the pricing on something like an iPad, they believe it more than if it's like a piece of paper you print it out or if you write it by hand. And that was some new, this is across, a multi-billion dollar sales across the dealership network. They had some real stats to back that up. So something for us to all think about. On the scheduling thing, in fact, Marty, you and I have been beating your schedule back and forth. And Jay, it's really something you're going to have to be working on here, is one of the things that I have a tendency to see is that school owners throw too much stuff in the schedule, repeat what you said a minute ago. They think that you getting to come three times a week, four times a week, five times a week is a benefit. And especially for the kids market, soccer mom and a Range Rover schlepping down her seven-year-old daughter is not only not a benefit, it's a detriment, right? So if you say to that person, you get the privilege of paying us an extra $200 a month for coming down here four times a week, the blowback's going to be, God, we're already running 20 different ways from Sunday already. There's no way we can do that. Now, having it be optional and having them have extra bonus stuff that they can do, that's a great thing. No reason in the world not to do that, or to have periodic seminars, or we always did a once-a-month leadership class where we brought all the schools together. But the language has to be, here are some additional optional things that you're allowed to do. It can't be the leadership program means you now come three times a week or four times a week, or you have to be here every Friday. And that was the example you used, but that's the other big sin is the only time you do the leadership material is on Thursday night at 7 or Saturday at 2 or Friday night. And now you have the family that has church on that night, or they have scouts on that night, and you just lost the sale because what you're presenting to them as the additional benefit is not workable. The other schedule, and Marty, this was the critique I gave you on your schedule, is your first highest priority always is to make sure that the intro time and the white belt classes, the beginner classes, are scheduled in the most flexible way possible, right? And what I find is students who are in year two, year three, year four, one is they're willing to come in at a later time, two is they're willing to come in on not as prime time. But I want to make sure that my new enrollments and my renewals, that they're coming in at the preferred time. Again, that's the difference if it's adults and kids sometimes. But whatever the preferred times are. And then I also want to have some flexibility. So like Marty, in your schedule, if I remember correctly, it was the beginners were every day at either 5 or 5:30. And if I have Monday, Wednesday at 5 or 5:30, I also want to have Tuesday, Thursday at 6:15 or at 7 or something like that. Because some portion of kids, parents get off work and have to come down, adults is the same way. So you want to give them some earlier afternoon times and some, mid-evening times. And for the adults, some, earlier evening times and later evening times to fit that around. The other thing I see oftentimes is scheduling the classes where you need to be doing renewal conferences and you need to be doing enrollment conferences where you're immediately, and sometimes in a single school operation, the most qualified person who should be doing the renewal conference or should be doing the enrollment conference is having to go to a high priority class and start teaching immediately. And then you book yourself in such a way that you don't have time to handle the conferences. Well, what would you add to that, Master Moody?
Well, I would, the other thing that it relates to curriculum as well is that the basic classes need to, if you're going to do what you just said, then some days you're going to have earlier classes and later classes, but they always need to at least, everybody in the school needs to at least have an opportunity to have a class around the 5:30 time frame or later for kids. And so when I see some schedules where they've got a preschool program, but the only time they offer it is at 4 o'clock, well, that's okay, but that's a pretty big market, and there's a lot of parents that do work. You don't have to have it every day at 5:30, because obviously we can't. We don't have multiple floors and multiple instructors at the same time. We wouldn't want that anyway. So making sure, you know, kind of one of my rules is everybody should be able to take class after 5 o'clock, you know, at least once or twice a week at their regular class time. And so what happens is you got to be, it makes your schedule complicated, but it takes a little bit of work to make it work out. The other thing that I've seen is a lot of people don't have Saturday classes, and you know, I've always found Saturday, for us, Saturday is a really big day, but that's because we've always had a full schedule on Saturday, and the people that don't do well on Saturdays, they start Saturdays out with kind of mixed classes or maybe makeup classes or some unusual class schedule, so it doesn't feel like a full class, and then Saturday becomes, for me, becomes a backup day. If somebody can't make their class time during the week because they have scouts or church or something else, they can always make Saturday.
Yeah, and
some other things.
And by the way, among our franchise owner operators, that's been a common thing, is they try to get rid of a day a week. And for those of us who have been multi-school owners for years, and Matt Schmidt is on the call right now, it's you and I, I was always getting pressure from the staff that they wanted to work a 5-day-a-week work schedule. And, you know, and so what they were always trying to do is say, we can do enough business in 5 days, we don't need Saturday. And, again, I've always found Saturday to be one of our most productive days. And, again, as you said, depending upon scheduling, but, I mean, I don't like truncating Saturday. I don't like not having a time for everybody to come in. I don't like pushing first intros and second intros both on Saturday. I tend to find them, you know, mid-morning to early afternoon for intro time. But, you know, some of the outrageous examples I use personally over the years, you know, when I did back-to-back conferences and did 36 enrollments in one day, that was all on a Saturday. I mean, it was a time when I could, you know, do enrollment conference from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., and it worked out just fine. So that is a good point. Typically, what we've done is have a little bit shorter day on Friday, but use Friday for all the kind of special things. And in a multi-school environment, what I always did on Fridays is it was a time when we had black belt prep candidates from all the different schools train at one central location, all those black belts. And so typically we would have a black belt prep class, we'd have a first degree black belt class, we'd have a first and second degree black belt class, a third degree and up class, and then an instructor class where we bring everybody together in one central location. Obviously that excludes intros, and we've had good luck with intros on Friday night as well, but it was a time to force everybody to get together in the same place at the same time and be on the same page.
And I would add, like, I just add one more thing on that. When I open a brand new school, I've had really good success opening Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So I'll open those 3 days, and the other days are sales, marketing, enrollments, lots of time spent building the school, because I don't want to open a school and be open 4 or 5 days a week and dilute the classes. So I open, do pre-sales, and then we start the classes already large. They're Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and when we get up to 90 students and we open another day, we'll open Monday or Wednesday, and Saturday's already from the beginning we start. Because, again, if people can't make class during the week, Saturday they can always make. So, you know, and everybody that I've ever seen that had no success on Saturday, number one, was either closed, so they can't make money on Saturday, or number two, they had a weird schedule. Like it was all the kids and everybody of every rank together in one group, you know, or only specialty classes or something like that. Well, of course, you're not going to make money on those days.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
those are both really good points. And I'm glad you made the other point as well, because it's what I meant to mention, is you really should, and again, I don't care whether it's software or it's a schedule on a clipboard that you write down numbers. You should know what your activity flow, in other words, what the headcount is for every class, for every day during the week. And if you take a look, what you'll find is you'll find, let's say, a whole bunch of beginners classes, but you'll find one or two that are really small and several that are really big, and that gives you a sense of the times and the days that, and so forth that people want. And what you should also be looking at is in balancing out the volume in the classes, not trying to have the same number of classes for every level and everything. And again, you've got to make sure you start with your priority, which is time in the schedule to do intros, time in the schedule following the beginner class to do upgrades, time in the schedule following the beginner class or following the intro time when you can sit down and do enrollment. And you really have to look through that thoroughly, but think through all the ramifications. And again, you know, Jeff, you and I were talking about building the kids program. And again, you look at your schedule, and if I have a kids program, Jeff, how many kids do you have active in your kids program right now?
About 75.
Okay, so 75 kids, and let's say I wanted the average class size to be, I'm going to pick a number, 10. So if I have 10 in the class with 75 kids, quickly, Master Moody, how many kids classes do I need to have?
75 kids. They figure they come in twice a week. That's 150 class slots, and I want 10 kids per class. Wait a minute.
Yeah, so that
doesn't work out. 15 classes if I had 10 kids per class.
No, that's about right, and probably the 15 is too high, right? So probably at that number I would aim for an average of 15 to 20 per class, and so then that gives me maybe 10 classes a week. Jeff, is that about what you have now?
No, we only have 5 classes, but within each class we split up into 3 groups.
Okay. Well, what are the groupings within those classes?
Well, we have the 4 to 6 year old little ninjas, and then we have the foundations group, which is 7 to 13 beginner group, and then we have our leadership and black belt club, which is the upgrades.
Oh, okay. Okay. And you have enough staffing there to essentially run 3 classes at the same time?
Yeah.
Okay. But again, your issue was that
that's 15 classes. Sorry to interrupt, but that's 15 classes.
It is.
They're just held at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So then that goes back to that same math. What we were saying is an awful lot of time is, especially smaller or newer schools, right? I mean, if you look at a class schedule that, let's say, we would run for a school with 350 active students, and there's no reason in the world that a school with 100 students should have the same class schedule, right? And Jeff, in essence, you're running, essentially four separate schools within one facility. Is that a right way to think about it?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, because you're running how many separate curriculums?
Well, we have our Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu curriculum, our Muay Thai and boxing curriculum, our Scrima curriculum, and our Tai Chi Qigong curriculum.
And then you have the kids program separate from the adult program. And
right.
What are the kids learning predominantly?
Mostly stand-up stuff from the Muay Thai and the Jeet Kune Do.
Okay. So really you're running Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Scrima, Tai Chi, and then Muay Thai, Jeet Kune Do, an adult program, and a kids program.
Right.
And something I don't think you and I have talked about, I've talked about it in general a lot of times, something you might consider is make all of the kids' classes family classes. So with the Muay Thai, Jeet Kune Do, you're getting a lot of adults who are coming in for themselves, and you can't put a 27-year-old adult male, let's say, in a class with kids. But you can then have 75 kids and end up with 30 parents who are also taking classes with them and give those parents the option of bring your child, take class with your child, or come to any of the other adult classes.
Right.
And that'll help in two ways. It'll, you know, what we're finding, Matt, I'm not sure what your ratio is, but I'm typically finding about 50%. So If we were to enroll 20 kids in a month, we would get 10 of them, where mom or dad would enroll with them. And we're typically getting 75-80% mom, as long as they can, again, do the, I'm going to come twice a week, and I'm going to train with Billy or train with Susie, and we can do it together and not have to come at a different time.
Yeah, how do you make the classes interesting for the adults and the kids at the same time?
You know, truthfully, it's not very difficult. Most of what you're doing with the kids is just fine for the adults. Then if you want to split the kids up, and keep in mind in this scenario, all of the adults are parents of the kids, right? So, you know, if it were me, if I'm there with my 12-year-old daughter, I'm there training, but I'm also there to be there with her and be doing it with her, right? And so the parents are much more flexible in how they're viewing the class than, again, if I was an adult coming in on my own, right? So you have to start with that mindset. The other is, just kind of like what you're already doing with the three-way split, is you can split the adults over to do, like, you know, more cardio type of bag drills or something while the kids are doing something that's a game. Or you can have the adults see the bag holders or whatever for the kids while they're doing something like that, right? So it's structurally, it's really much easier than you would think it is.
Can I add that we shouldn't assume that the adults that we're dealing with in this environment are us?
Right.
We're all the karate people that did it in the little crappy school with, you know, no gear and none of the safety equipment, and we grew up in a different environment than what we're... So we can't assume that those people are us. These people are deconditioned, you know, market that, you know, just wants to get in shape or do a simple activity. They're not people like us. So don't make that assumption when we're thinking. I mean, you know, you can still have badass adult classes, but they can be a separate class. But the family class are for people that aren't like us.
Yeah, well, and they still have the option. If I'm, you know, a 40-year-old dad who's coming in twice a week with my son, they still have the option of also coming in to any of the adult classes at that point. And I've seen a lot of that where they'll come once or twice a week with a child and it's a family activity, and then they'll come once a week to something that they perceive to be more, you know, hardcore. Just more of, if nothing else, for something that's a little bit more of a workout. Hey, let's stop there. Any questions on any of this conversation so far?
I have a question. I think it's for Jeff Poole. This is Jay.
Yeah.
Regarding the kids, I think I missed it. What were you focusing on the kids doing in their classes? Were they doing more of the kickboxing stuff and you left the weaponry to the adults?
Yeah, until they get in the leadership program. And in the leadership program, they start doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and a little bit of a screamer.
I got you. So you have, like, the little ninjas, you got foundations, you've got the leadership program, and like, one other program?
The Black Belt Club.
The Black Belt. Okay, cool. Thank you, sir.
No problem.
You know, and to add a perspective to that, Jeff, right now, what's your male-female split on the kids' classes?
It's 50-50. Maybe 50-50. It's pretty close. 50-50. Yeah.
You know, anybody correct me if this is the wrong perception, but when I have tried to take a 50-50 class, boys and girls, and move them into leadership curriculum that had a fair amount of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I ended up creating a much higher dropout rate for myself than I wanted. And again, I think it's very different if you're looking at, like, what Eric and High's kids program is predominantly a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu class, right? I think it's different if you bring them into grappling and then you move them into more stand-up than if they're coming in from stand-up and you move them into grappling. And Eric and I have had this conversation pretty extensively. What from like a Jeet Kune Do or a Taekwondo or any kind of stand-up curriculum, the Eskrima thing is a marvelous addition, especially with the kids, right? Because it's fun and it's exciting and there's, you know, the sticks are clicking and clacking and all that stuff. It's pretty useful. But I think you've got to be thinking really about how that leadership curriculum moves to make sure you're moving them into things that are progressively, like, perceived as being more cool and more fun, and then anything that may be something they don't really want to do, you're keeping it over as an optional, not an obligatory thing. Does that make sense, Jeff?
Yeah, most of the kids, I would say at least 90% of them seem really stoked when we do the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and like it's one of the funner things that they do, and it seems like they even, a lot of them like it even more than the stand-up. And, you know, there's a couple kids that are a little timid when they first start, but for the most like it.
Yeah, and it may, my experience may be more with adult females as opposed to the kids. We, for a while, had kind of adopted what Chuck Norris was doing, which was a full jiu-jitsu curriculum once you got the black belt, and then parallel jiu-jitsu ranks at second, third-degree black belt, like you'd have to be a, you know, to be a third-degree black belt, let's say you had to be a purple belt, I forget exactly what it was in jiu-jitsu. And I ended up kind of pushing a lot of, especially the adult women, kind of out the door because they weren't comfortable with that curriculum. So just as a food for thought, but with the kids, it may well be a different psychology, especially with the 7, 8, 9 year olds. Well, good. Any other questions on this or anything that we were on topic with so far before we shift gears? I guess not. Okay, Jan, let me shift over to you. So, Jan, one of the conversations we've had is that you're doing an awful lot of marketing, but you're not getting the kind of results you used to get. Is that a fair shorthand summary? Jan, are you still there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can. Very good.
But I was muted, sorry.
That's
my issue. We do about 20 different marketing things a month, and we're not getting the same results that we used to get.
Okay. And on the call, certainly Thomas and Marty, I know for sure, really are looking forward to a big summer blitz here. Jay's actually getting ready to do a grand opening for back to school, and Jeff, what you're looking to do is take that kids program from 75 to, let's say, 200. So we're really looking to blitz that. Jan, from your marketing plan for July and August here, let's walk through what you have on the agenda so far, and think about what else we can add, and also how we can get more effective. Does that sound like a good starting point? So
yes.
So what do you have on the agenda right now coming up in July and August?
Okay, my program director is pulling it up, but we have lots of different things. We have a big open house anniversary party in August. We're planning on being in all the schools for the orientation in August and giving out free school supplies, and we usually sign up some people then. What else do we have? We have every door direct mail. We're doing that. We pretty much do that consistently. We've got some the magazines that we've got stuff done, and we have a referral contest that's ending tomorrow night, and then we'll start something different. What else do we have going on? We signed up downtown for the summer special that we have going on, $99 summer special. We've got signs for that. We've got quite a few, and then we just started the Groupons. We've got some leads from the Groupons. What else do we have?
You said something I missed there. Open house, back to school nights orientation with the school supply thing, and then every door direct referral contest, the bandit or yard signs, the Groupons. There was something else in there.
Yes, sir. I'm not sure what else I've got. I said every door direct mail, maybe.
Okay, I got that.
Yeah, we do that. And then we have, like, little, like, we mail out to neighborhoods in their like certain neighborhoods that are kind of the nicer neighborhoods, we mail out in their newsletters. We do little advertisements.
Okay.
We also, like 4th of July, we have a parade, and we give out, I don't know, what did we give out last year, 4,000 or something? We're in a small community with a fairly low income, but we give out about 5,000, like VIP cards, or we try different things.
Right.
So we do the parade, we have a big group that marches, and I have a bunch of parents that walk around and give out the VIP cards, or whatever
right.
we give. This year, I think we're giving on VIP. Last year, we gave out like a $49 karate stuff, and we didn't get much from it. We do pizza boxes. We're on all these pizza boxes that go out. We do a teacher breakfast for the teachers, I guess, to go back to school. Trying to think of what else. I don't have my marketing thing in front of me, so. But that gives you an idea. We do a lot. We've got a lot of stuff. We have Buddy Days going on, of course. I've got them in the schedule. We have parents as partners going on. We have a national night out, which is like a safety thing. We do demos in different subdivisions. We try to like divide and conquer and go to different subdivisions and teach them some basic self-defense and give out cars and try to get some business that way. Here's a good one that we just started doing. This is our first year. The school planner, we have an ad. We're going to be on the back of the school planner page that all the kids get.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be verbal judo, and we're pushing the whole bully thing. And then, of course, I'm going to get back into the school and do some speeches like assemblies or whatever for the – I do the verbal judo stuff.
Right.
We have the open houses, too. When the school starts again, we'll go to the open houses, and we'll do like a gift – we'll give something away, a gift certificate there to get some leads. And then
okay.
I'm planning on going to school board. I'm going to try to get in. Some schools I still can't get in. So this summer, I'm going to go to the school board and try to talk to the superintendent to try to get him to endorse me in all the schools in this area. Because I think it'll be easier. Some of the principals just won't let me in. And then I have a big bully seminar as soon as school starts in August. We've got a bully seminar here that we invite the whole, you know, everybody to.
Okay.
So we do a lot of things. Technology-wise, I'm not doing very much. I think that's my weak area. But we're doing a lot of things. I mean, everyone in the community knows us. We are out there. And, of course, we have signage up front. We change it all the time. We have specials. We do a lot of emailing. We visit all the businesses. We have wrap cards in all the businesses. We give, like, gifts to the businesses and stuff like that to try to keep the relationships good. I don't know if you heard my program director, but we give out a lot of gift certificates for anything, the dog shelter, or someone's doing a relay for a lot, whatever it is, we give out gift certificates for everything we can. It's usually birthday parties, and then we do a lot of birthday parties, and we're starting to get some people from the birthday parties.
Okay.
And like, tomorrow night, we have a movie night, tomorrow night. So it's $5 for our students to come, and they can bring a friend for free. So we're hoping we get a bunch of friends there.
Okay. So, I mean, it's a good list to start with. And, let's talk about a couple of the specific things. Is, and Mass Media, chip in any time you want, or anybody else, chip in any time any. Any point here, across all of these things, Dan, as a general rule, how is your balance between passing out literature versus capturing a lead versus making an appointment versus getting them to pay something on the spot? In other words, if you go out to an elementary school or a daycare or a back to school night. Are you capturing name, address, phone number, email address for most of the participants?
No.
Okay. Well, that's
sometimes we don't. Depends on the situation. In the school system, we usually don't because we can't. But
well,
it'll,
okay, 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 okay. Let me ask you to eliminate that last sentence from your vocabulary for a minute.
We haven't been able to do that so far, sir.
Yeah, so far we haven't known the strategy in order to do that effectively. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would guess in 30 years in Colorado, let me see if I can do something that's going to be plus or minus 30% at least. Let's see. We've probably in public schools generated, got worst case scenario, 20,000 leads a year in public schools, name, address, phone number, with the parents indicating whether they're interested in follow up for the free offer or not. And that's probably a really conservative number. And so it certainly can be done. And it's been done extremely effectively with people I've worked with in Florida and Michigan and California and a ton of other places. And, you know, and like Kim and Daytover, we were doing a program in the public schools, and Kim would always say to me, well, it can't be done in California. And I'd always say, well, it can be done. You just got to figure out the right way. And then they morphed it into a program where they were ended up, I don't know, probably enrolling on the average 500 kids a year directly from their access to the public schools. But the first thing, and this is a big principle, is you've always got to generate as first priority either a paid or a free intro appointment. In anything and everything you can do, if it's at all possible. Now, I'll freely admit, you go into an elementary school and you do an assembly, that's a difficult thing to do. It's difficult to get an appointment because you don't have the parents there. However, with things like that, you can get 70 to 80% of them where you have name, address, phone number, and probably at least half of them permission to contact them. Okay? But from the big principle, it's number one, preferably a paid, in practical terms over the years, mostly been free, but you want to at least have name, address, phone number, email address, preferably mobile phone number, and you want to schedule an appointment. Number two is, in lieu of that, you want at least a lead, meaning name and as much contact information as you can, you know, so name, phone number, email address, name, phone number, mailing address. And then number three, of course, is just exposure and literature distribution. But exposure and literature distribution never works very well, and nowadays it works worse than it ever did. Just because they're so inundated with stuff, right? And then to the second point that you made, Jan, is that once we get really good at, and this is true for advertising, for community outreach with schools, it's true for all your online activities, once we get really good at generating a lead, really where the vast majority of our advertising money probably should be spent, at least until we get into a pretty good sized budget, is on following up with everybody who's shown interest, as opposed to constantly going out trying to get new people to show interest. Does that make sense? And
yes.
So again, as a big principle, what we have available now is probably number one on the list is outbound telemarketing. And the problem nowadays is that, you know, with the advent of cell phones and caller ID and so forth, is people less and less just don't answer their phone. You know, I used to be able to go to a scout show and we would get maybe 2,000 leads, and we knew that on Sunday night at 7 we could start calling them all and that we would get hold of probably 80 or 90% of them. Nowadays, and if anybody gets better results than this, let me know. But nowadays we're probably finding that, you know, you get 5 or 10% of the people to answer their phone, right? But outbound telemarketing is still great when they answer their phone. Number two in the list of priority probably is text messaging. Number three is direct mail. number four is probably broadcast voicemail. And then I would say, correct me if I miss anything here, Master Moody, number five is probably email. And, you know, everybody make a note for yourself. Email isn't dead, but it is dying. So, you know, email is good for sharing information. It's bad for getting people's attention. So it's useful to share the newsletter. It's useful to, you know, do some other stuff. But a lot of what I've seen extremely effective marketing campaigns is leave them a broadcast voicemail and send them a text that tells them to look at the mailbox, right? So all and send them an email that tells them to look at the direct mail feed, or even send them a text to tell them to look at their email. Does that all make sense?
Yes, sir.
So
yeah, I hope everybody's taking notes on this because. There's so many times where I hear somebody saying there, but I emailed them. Well, a really good open rate. You got to understand a really good open rate, like somebody who really wants to get your email and something you've really wanted to do. A really good open rate is about 30%. That's a good open rate.
Yeah, and that doesn't even address deliverability, right? Is you know to some of them like you. Emailed AOL, they may just in bulk throw away the email and may never even get to the recipient. Or it gets stuck in their spam filter and they never see it. But, so anyway, you know, I mean, that list was, I mean, if I had my first priority, you know, I'd show up on their door and knock on their door and talk to them face to face. You know, in most cases, we're not going to do that. In some cases, you know, if a school doesn't have enough other high leverage activities, they probably should be doing it, right? I've never actually done very much of that for my school, but I've done a lot of outbound telemarketing. Again, what I can tell you is outbound telemarketing is getting very difficult because people, and it's not even do not call. You know, the do not call list is a problem because you can't do cold outbound telemarketing. But even with leads, they just don't answer their phone consistently. And email is dying. And in order to get email to work, you've really got to beat them to death with it. Again, I quoted for a lot of you the study I saw recently. The big retailers like Nordstrom and Macy's, to their customer list, are emailing between 360 and 760 times a year. In other words, between once and twice a day. And so that gives you a sense of how much frequency you have to have in that. But So again, Dan, on all of this stuff, part of it is really getting focused on making sure that you're always getting a lead and then following up, and then if you can push it back to the next step of make an appointment on the spot, you're going to be better off. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And then it's number two is get really good at once you have a lead to think in terms of contacting them by direct mail, between 24 and 40 times the next year. And then contacting them by email between 300 and 500 times the next year. And at least during peak season, so right now if we collect a bunch of leads for July, we know back to school is one of those. So at least during peak season, hit them hard, text, broadcast, voicemails, outbound telemarketing, right? And all of these other events you're doing are all fabulous. So you have the movie night, you have the buddy day, obviously the referral contest, you have all these internal, the bully seminar. All of those are things where all of the leads that you've generated should all get an invitation to the bully seminar by personal call, by text, by direct mail, by broadcast voicemail, and by email, right? So they should all get an invitation to the bully seminar, they should all get an invitation to Buddy Day, they should all get an invitation to all those different things that you've been doing.
And we haven't been doing that, so that's a really good point right there. We don't do that.
Yeah, now let's go back a second to that same principle that we're talking about. And let's talk about every door direct mail. I was just watching a little online video with Frank Kern, so some of you may know him. He's one of the internet marketing gurus, quite a character.
But in the video, they were pointing out, they were referencing back to two people I know pretty well, Jay Abraham and Dan Kennedy. But the number one thing that gets any marketing campaign to work, and certainly with direct mail, the number one thing, the most important criteria of what it's going to, of how it's going to work, is the list. So everybody write that down. So number one is the list. Now number two is, and let's take it in the direct mail context, number two is getting them to open it, right? And so that's how it's packaged, what the envelope looks like, whether it's got teaser copy on the envelope or whether it's a postcard. In an ad, that's the headline. So in other words, the headline is the ad for the ad to get them to read the ad. In a mailing, it's a little more complicated. Because if it's a postcard, it might be the billboard size, which is the headline and the photo, to get them to pay attention. If it's an envelope mailing, perhaps it's teaser copy, or it's sneak up on them. In other words, hand address, live stamp, looks like it's from, you know, from your grandmother. But it's the number two criteria is getting them open. And then the number three criteria is what the offer is, right? And the problem with Every Door Direct Mail is the only sort you have on the list is geographic, right? So, you know, you go point in a neighborhood, you say, I want to go to that neighborhood over there. And you can hone it in a little bit because, if nothing else, you drive the neighborhood and there's a lot of trikes and, you know, basketball hoops in the neighborhood or whatever it might be. And there's three-car garages, not two-car garages, or there's houses on the golf course versus it being government subsidized. But the opportunity with Every Door Direct is that it's really cheap, right? The challenge with Every Door Direct is the list is not very targeted, right? And so if I have the option of spending, pick a number, $2,000 on an extensive mailing to my existing lead list of people who have been in for birthday parties, who had been to a school demo, who had come in for an intro and didn't enroll, or Every Door Direct Mail, I'd much rather spend a lot more money on the lead list. Because now, and you may be able to sort some of those out by they were broke people or something, right? But mostly what I have is I have people who are already at least a little bit interested, who just didn't choose to enroll then. Does that make sense? So if I had an example, let's say one choice is to do something like there's a company, God, it's slipping my mind. Oh, it's got it right here. Treat email. This company that does treat email. So you can mail bank bags, you can mail trash cans, you can mail a message in a bottle, you can mail all kinds of really, really crazy stuff to get their attention, right? So if I had a choice of spend 50 cents on a cold lead or spend $10 on a warm lead, and for $10, I could mail them like a bottle with a little chip in it with a note in the bottle. I could mail them a trash can. I could mail them a priority mail envelope, and I could mail them probably a bank bag. So, you know, something like that. I get a bank bag in the mail, or I get a big chrome red envelope, or I get a fake express mail with a big eagle on it, or something comparable. Is that stuff that now really gets their attention, gets them to pay attention to it, and I'm sending them to a better list because I'm sending it to people who have already expressed an interest. Does that make sense so far?
Yes, sir.
So as you balance it out, I mean, you're really better off to spend a lot of marketing activity designed to generate a list than spend and then follow up with spending a ton of money on everybody who's interested.
Master Oliver, is an example of those cheap direct Every Door Direct Mail, something like Valpax. Do you have Valpax in your area?
Yeah, on a national basis, you have Valpax, you have Money Mailer, which are marriage mail. Now, that's different. Every Door Direct Mail is a freestanding piece that you tell the post office
basically, I want to do that neighborhood over there. And then you can do a postcard or whatever the mail piece is. Again, what is the cost per piece on the Every Door Direct now when you're doing it at the top of your head?
It's 14 cents a piece, and you can do income and household size now also. And we've had pretty
okay.
good luck with it. It's not a home run, but we get one or two leads from every time we do it. So it's been worth it. I've kept track of it for the last few years.
Yeah, well, and again, we're definitely in the type of business, right, where if my average new student that enrolls in the school, if I compute it out, so let's say in your case you're grossing $40,000 a month enrolling 10 students a month. So is that more or less about right?
Close enough. We did like 47 last year a month, and we enrolled, I think, on the average of 9 or 10.
Okay, well, even better. So, and your student value is close to what Keith Hacker's always been running, right? So his number was 5,000. So now you're doing 47,000 a month and rolling 10 a month. And everybody should take notes of that, right? Because, Dan, that's the thing you're doing best. I mean, that's a really good ratio. So now each new student that comes in is worth $4,700. So now what that tells you is that, and Keith's number, by the way, is that each new student was worth $5,000, and on average, he was spending in advertising dollars between $800 and $1,200 to get a new student, and making money hand over fist. Okay? So with those ratios, that was translated into a school doing $100,000 a month gross, $50,000 a month net, with him spending most of the day, you know, reading by his school. So it wasn't like it required a lot of time and effort on his part to keep that thing spinning, right? But there's the other big lesson that we focus on is $4,700 a month average revenue per student, which I imagine everybody else on the call needs to take note of, because I'm guessing you've got the highest number of anybody who's currently on the call right now. So $4,700 per student. If you spent $1,000 to get a new suit, you'd be happy, right? So if you did Every Door Direct Mail, and you got, let's take any kind of number here, so 14 cents a piece. So let's say you spent $2,800, and that generated two students, and that those two students cost $1,400. What it means in reality is that you made $3,300 that then goes towards all the other expenses that you pay for the Every Door Direct Mail. Right? So, and that's probably the upper limit of what I'd be willing to tolerate, but so if I spent $2,800 on Every Door Direct Mail and only got two enrollments, I could live with it. If I got four or five, I'd be happy. If I get eight or ten, I'd be ecstatic. And now, if you're running in those numbers, right? So if you're running in the number of last time you did it, what would you say you spent?
On Every Door Direct Mail, what did we spend? A couple thousand?
$1,500
was our last.
Okay. Okay. How many enrollments? Well, how many intros would you say you got from that?
We did a $99 special last time, so it was kind of a different one. And we got quite a few. How many did we get? It was like $99 for the whole summer, so it wasn't our normal. It's like not a normal sign up.
Those are in my parlance, those are intros. Those are paid intros.
Yeah. Right.
So how many of those did you get?
12, but you think they all came from the Every Door Direct Mail?
No.
She's thinking maybe seven. We got 12, but they didn't all come from Every Door Direct Mail.
Okay.
Seven. We should sign up 50% of them. Last year we signed up 52, at least 50% of our 99 special.
Okay. Okay. So, and 50% is not bad. You probably
good.
Could get to 70 or 80%. That goes back to Matt Moody, that call you did on signing up group bonds, the same concept. But again, 50% isn't a bad number. It's pretty good. you might be able to push that up to 60-70%. So the problem you had with summer specials versus Groupon is some of them were 12-year-olds staying with grandma for the weekend, right? So early on for the summer, so can't do anything with that. Okay, so let's run the numbers. So $1,500, 99 times 7, in essence, you got 700 of it back just from that offer. So it was only $800 after the 99. And then you enrolled four people, so or should enroll four people. So now you've got $200 per enrollment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, $200 per enrollment is fabulous because on average you're getting a 20-to-1 return on investment, right? Because they're going to be worth $4,700. So it's more like
I'm not real clear on the $4,700 though, because I thought my per person average was like $200 a month, which is $2,400 a year. So I don't quite understand the $4,700.
Well, they're the same number, but the per person average of $200 a month, what it doesn't consider is your student retention, right? So, you know, if you take your school, that is sounds like you're keeping them on average for about 2.5 years, a little under, right? So, well, about 2 years. And you take another school, I talked to a gentleman recently who was turning over 30% a month, right? So if you're in the boat, right, I mean, that was the worst I've ever heard. But let's say you had a school that was dropping out 10% a month. So now, statistically, 100% of them are going to be gone in 10 months. If their average revenue per student is $200 a month, just like yours is, their average revenue per new enrollment is certainly going to be $2,000. Right? So you have much better retention, which means that on average, each of those new enrollments is going to spend $4,700.
I got
that. What that improvement in retention means is, frankly, you can spend an awful lot more money to get a student and still be highly profitable. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, here would be one natural question. I mean, you know, one thing that doesn't negate the other, right, is the Every Door Direct Mail is working marvelously for you by these computations. And you still should be spending an awful lot more money on prospects than you're doing now and following up with them a lot more extensively from all different media you can. Okay? So one doesn't have anything to do with the other, right? But if it's truly costing you $200 to get an enrollment, and you spent $1,500. Now the question is can you go to a comparable list that, you know, 50,000 households rather than whatever that was? Sounds like it was, 10,000? So could you dramatically up the volume or could you dramatically up the frequency? One of the things I found with direct mail is I get a much higher, response rate if I mail to them, let's say, three times in a month rather than just once, right? So one thing to do would be the same list, triple the volume, you know, triple the number of times you're hitting them. The other thing to do is say, wow, that worked really well. It only cost me $200 to get an enrollment. Is there a list that's double, triple, or quadruple that size that would work comparably as well, right? Is it's now roll it out from there. Now there may or may not be. If this was like the best neighborhood with the best income range for you, then there may not be the ability to ramp that up. But if there is, you know, you should double down, triple down, or quadruple down on that. Right?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions or thoughts on this before we move forward? Is it all making sense?
So far, so good.
Yeah. So far, so good. Master Moody, anything to add so far?
No, I think it's really helpful to make sure that we are considering our ROI on each. The two things, the big things, are considering the ROI on each thing, and sometimes we do stuff that's expensive, so we limit how much we do it. But if I can double or triple it and maintain the same ROI, as long as it's a really good ROI, then what do I care? I should be spending as much money as possible on those things that get to generate 20-to-1. So,
let's illustrate that. So, I think the number was $1,500, right? So, let's say theoretically that I could spend 10 times that and have comparable results, right? So if I could spend $15,000 to have comparable results, and let's say it was the same offer, the $99 offer, right? So in order to be at 10 times the budget, 10 times the results, now I get 70. And 70 translates into $7,000 cash right away. So I've got $15,000 minus $7,000. So I'm still in the hole by $8,000, right? But then I convert 70 leads to 35 enrollments. Those 35 enrollments are going to be lifetime of their involvement worth $4,700 each, because there's no reason that's going to change. So now what I've got is 35 times 4,700. I've got $164,000 in revenue that's going to come in over the lifetime of their involvement from an $8,000 investment in the advertising. So the question is how often would you be willing to do that? Well, as much as you can. So the first question is within a reasonable geographic radius, how big a list could you get for the Every Door Direct that more or less mirrors what you're mailing to already? Because now if you start going into a worse and worse quality list, it's going to affect it, right? And number two is what level of frequency can I go to that would keep comparable results or even multiply it? And certainly going to mailing to the same list every other week for a month and then maybe taking a break every other week for a month, I would think is going to multiply the results. It should. And then the question is how much of a reduction in results could I tolerate and still be happy with it? Well, if the number was, instead of costing me $200 to get an enrollment, if it was costing me $800 to get an enrollment, I'd still be making a ton of money. And even if it got up to $1,000 for me to make to get an enrollment, I'd still make a ton of money. Does that all make sense? So the first most important number to know is, and the way I was computing that, by the way, was the average monthly growth or the yearly growth divided by the average number of enrollments, right? So we were computing the average monthly growth of 47,000, the average monthly enrollments at 10, and Dan, you said that's actually a little high. And so we're computing that 4,700 is the average revenue that an enrolled student is going to pay. And again, I was talking about Keith's numbers. His numbers for a long time were 100,000 plus a month in revenue, 22 enrollments a month. And it multiplied out at right at 5,000, so it's about 110 revenue at 22 enrollments a month. And it was about $5,000 in average revenue per student. And in order to get to that point, he was spending an average of $12,000 a month in advertising. But the reality was over half of his enrollments were coming from internal family add-ons and referral activities. Do those numbers all make sense to everybody?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Something you touched on is orientation days or back-to-school nights. Walk us through what you do at the back-to-school nights.
Okay. And before I do it, the average was 9 last year, and the average was 47. I just want to be clear. And but we're only doing, so far this year, we're only averaging, I think, like, what, 43? So I didn't want to mislead you. So it has gone down this year. For the
well,
past 12 months,
And here is likely the dynamic. Is Nick Okinas used to call it living off the fat of the land. The 47 to 10 number may be inflated a little bit, because if the enrollment numbers were going down, but you're still collecting the billing and doing renewals and so forth from the past, is that may inflate the number a little bit, right? But what it tells us is really your average student value is high, your average student retention is really good, and your marketing activities can be massively pumped up, both in effectiveness at everything that you're doing, plus you can be comfortable spending an awful lot more money on things that work because of the revenue that's going to come in on a per student basis.
Yes, so that makes
okay.
sense.
Okay. Well, let's
look at it that way. Because we look at it sometimes, we do the mailing, we spend $2,000, we get nothing, and we're like, oh, I don't want to do this again. But sometimes if we actually sit back and look at the numbers, then you realize it really does work. It just isn't, it's the statistics are real over a long period, but maybe you might do a mailing and get nothing one time, and it's frustrating.
Oh, exactly right. Exactly right. And you know, my favorite thing over the years was TV, but I got to tell you, you know, you got to have cojones on that one, because you swing for the fences and you could dump $30,000 in the TV and get flooded, or you could dump $30,000 and hear the crickets chirping. So it was one of those high return when it worked, high risk activities, and pretty much all advertising efforts tend to be that way, although the more you end up in direct response, direct mail versus broadcast, the more dependent you can make, or the more dependable you can make it, although there still are some variables that are hard to account for. So let's go to the back-to-school thing. Tell us what you've been doing with that.
Okay, you mean like, well, for the orientations, what we do, and it's been a pretty good hit, is all of our schools have an orientation day that the kids go, and the elementary schools, and they see who their teacher is and all that. And we go there, and that's one thing that most of the schools have let us in, because we give school supplies. It's just pencils with our logo. It's little real cheap notebooks with our logo and say, what does it say, come for 30 days or some special. We always have a special offer on it. And then we give out those. But at the so anyone walking by, and we don't just stand, we have a table. And in walking by, we don't stand behind the table. We go out in front and we just hand them to the parents, and we try to get them to come over to our booth. And then at the booth, we raffle off a backpack. This is how we get the names and addresses. We raffle off a backpack full of school supplies. So quite a few of them. And it's not very expensive. It's a middle, you know, ours, the backpack's logoed. Everything's logoed. And it's just got some basic school supplies in it. And so we get quite a few. How many do you think we get per time?
We probably get anywhere between 25 and 40. But
we
find, I've signed people up for our after school program right there in our booked appointments right
yeah.
there on
the
spot.
Can you hear? Okay. She said we booked appointments and we've signed people up on the spot there, which is good. The goal is obviously to sign them up or to book the appointment. But we've got, she said, probably between 20 and 40 leads. It's not huge. That our schools are maybe 600 people, and then they don't all go to orientation, but that's probably about how many leads we get. But it's definitely worth it to be there, and it costs us nothing.
Yeah. Now, we've done the same type of thing where we got 40 to 60 appointments.
Wow.
And if you go into the member website, and on all the stuff that you were talking about here, this is applicable to the 4th of July parade. It's applicable to the back-to-school nights or the orientation nights. It's the same thing we were talking about there. It's applicable to any big live event. And, of course, the biggie in the summer is also the movie theaters and July 4th events, all the different July 4th events, right? But if you go into the member site and look under movie promotions, or maybe it's under the Karate Kid movie promotions. But we have the booth set up, pictures of the booth, videos of the thing, artwork we use for Karate Kid. We'll do some somewhat Ninja Turtle centric stuff before long too. But we have all that stuff in there, and the drawing thing works fine. The big prize wheel that you spin that makes a lot of noise as they queue up to spin works 10 times better. And there's a supplier, I don't have it top of my head here, on the cheapest end of the spectrum, Oriental Trading carries these things. And so
we
have
one
for like... Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah, we used to get cheap ones, and then finally we broke down and got a big one. We haven't had deals with that, though. Maybe it's the way we're doing it, but we haven't had real good luck with that.
We've had great luck with it, but it's all about getting people to queue up in line and then fill out the form before they spin the wheel, make the appointment to come pick up their prize at the school and receive their free week of lessons or 2 free weeks of lessons, whatever the offer is, immediately upon spinning the wheel, and then creating prizes that they want to come to the school to pick up, right? And in any of these live events, that's extremely important. We've had really good results with that. And there's, again, I'm trying to think of the supplier. Maybe you know where you got the squeal. We just got one that was plus or minus $300, but it's really nice floor stand. It has where you can print on your computer on each of the prize things. You slide the papers into it to do the prize. We may have that up on the website. If not, I can track it down for anybody who wants to. And like you said, even Oriental Trading has a prize wheel. The prize wheels they have are really cheap, and they call it Park Quick. But if you're in a short-term crisis, you can get two or three of the ones from them to use it instead. The other thing I wanted to go back to was the school-taught type of thing. And we're going to run out of time here real quickly. But when you go into an elementary school, what are you doing most again?
Well, most of the time, it's going into classrooms. Like, say I get a third-grade teacher to let me in their classroom, and then we try to get all the third-graders together if we do that. And then I'll go in and I'll talk about we do straight A parties for anyone who gets straight A's. So I'll go in and I'll talk to them about, respect, the three ways we show respect, and then I talk about what it takes to get straight A's or to get the good grades. And I always tie it into martial arts and say, our black folks, have over 30% of our black folks get straight A's or whatever. So I always tie it back. And then before I leave, if I'm in a classroom, I always give them, like, we always set up a seminar for usually the next day. I try to go in on like a Thursday or Friday, and I try to set up a seminar like you can get a free sword or you can get a free pair of nunchucks or whatever. And we set that up for like that Friday night or that Saturday. So we always try to have like a call to action so they'll remember it. But most of the time they don't.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. The first key, and I try to mostly for us to first talk about what the principle is, right? Is the first principle is if you go into something, and let's say that I have choice A, choice B, or choice C. Choice A, groups of kids taking a class from me where they're actually doing some physical movement and I'm actually teaching them something. Choice B, I've got a team of 10 kids who are black belts who are going to perform for them. And choice C, where I'm going to go in and lecture to them. I always want to move towards the kids that are actually participating in class, not that we're doing a show and not that I'm lecturing to them. Okay? So the more I can move everything to is the class. And, back in the early 80s, we had a demo team and we'd take them all to school, pass out flyers, and hardly get anything from it. And then we shifted to going in and doing teach for the day, where we would, bring them through in groups of 30 or groups of 60 and actually teach them a little class, and the numbers went up dramatically. But then the other key is what we talked about already, is always leaving not with telling them to call you or telling them there's something going on or passing out a flyer, but always leave with their contact information so you can proactively go back to them, right? And what happens is the public schools will always rebel when you say, give me the list of all the kids that I talked to. On
right.
the other hand, they're all used to and comfortable with the idea for field trips and for extra events that the kids need to fill out permission slips so the parents are informed and aware of what's going on, right? And, you know, one of the things that kind of went through the industry was the whole idea of Barry Vanner was selling a program called School Talks. And School Talks came from Greg Silva teaching him my idea of what we did, but Barry missed the key component. And the key component was permission slips. So what you can get them to do is, and the language is really easy. If nothing else, I always say, well, if nothing else, our insurance company requires us to at least know who participated in the event. And by the way, here's our proof of insurance, and you're an additional insured, and so forth. And for everybody's edification, if you don't already have a relationship, I'll always go in with, here's the background check, here's the proof of insurance, here's the school district already named as proof of insurance, here's the 82 references of parents who think this is great, here's the references of other principals in your district who love us, here's the references of other teachers who love us, right? I mean, the more of that kind of package I can put together, the better. But then I'll just say, one of the things we require is we got to have a mission slip. And sometimes they'll say, well, is this just a marketing gimmick for all? I says, well, no. You know, I mean, and they'll say, well, we can't give you the information on the kids. They say, well, no, we're not asking you to give us anything. We're asking the parents to give us whatever information they're comfortable with sharing. Right? And so then if the parent fills out and, it'll have room for, you know, kid's name, parent name, mailing address, email address, mobile number. But what we start adding over the years is a little line at the bottom which says all the kids participate will get 2 free weeks of lessons and a free uniform if they'd like. Are you interested in us contacting you to take advantage of this? They could check yes or no. And the ones that didn't check yes, we wouldn't call them. The ones that did check yes, we would call them. But everybody else, we would put them in the email follow-up, we'd put them in the direct mail follow-up, and we just wouldn't call them at dinner at 7 o'clock at night.
Hmm.
And that, at least 10 times the results you get from that, right? And then obviously, once you've got that contact information, you invite all of them to the buddy day, and you invite them all to the movie night, and you invite them all to the glow chug night or whatever it might be, or the ninja night, and you make sure they all get the summer promotion, and you put them in the sequence so you're contacting them repetitiously over and over and over again.
Pastor Oliver, did you say the ones that said, do not have permission to call them, did you say that you found another way to contact them and you emailed them instead?
Well, the only place I have found much blowback is in outbound telemarketing, right? Because what you don't want to do is you don't want to have, one bitchy mom goes and complains to the principal that, you called them at dinner at 7 o'clock and you were trying to sell them something after her kid did this thing, right? But I've never had anybody, that's overgeneralization. Out of millions over the years, I probably had one person call and say, God damn it, don't ever mail me anything again, right? But it's very rare for you to get any negative blowback on direct mail. On email, you can get a little bit of blowback, but as long as you're using a reputable service that has an opt-out link. And in the early email on something like that, I would put, you're getting this because your child expressed interest in our program from XYZ Elementary. If you want to be taken off this list, click this link right now. Otherwise, feel free to read, what else is here, and we'll continue to keep you informed, right? So you make it an obvious opt-out, right? And arguably, text messaging is a little bit invasive, and if it was somebody who didn't check yes, I might not put them in the text messaging follow-up, but I would definitely do direct mail. I would definitely do email. Is that all making sense for everybody?
Is there?
Dan, has this been helpful for you so far? I mean, there's a lot more we could cover in all these different pieces. I'm sure there's probably five or six things where there's room for minor or major improvements. But,
right.
You know, for, I mean, for everybody's benefit, it's always focused on generating a lead and, if possible, focus on generating an appointment. And then once you've got that lead, just be constant and never-ending in the follow-up.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely, it's helpful.
Good. Anybody have any last questions, or Master Moody, anything to wrap up before we're done for the day? We're about 5 minutes over our allotted time here.
No, I think it's very useful.
Any last questions from anybody?
I'm all set.
Okay, good. We do have this recorded. I'll make sure everybody has it available, because I know we covered a lot of ground today. But hopefully it was very valuable. Again, the disclaimer, I did send out a first iteration of that schedule that showed our calls here on Friday, dates that were Fridays, not Thursdays. So double check that. Our two of the calls a month are on Thursdays. And then the other reminder is our next meeting is in Colorado Springs. It's at the Cheyenne Mountain Resort. Our meeting in October will be at the fair, which is a facility that's right on property of West Point. You have to go through the security checkpoint to get to the hotel. It's right on property. But I'm still working on behind the scenes at Air Force Academy and perhaps a tour over the Olympic Training Center. So if you're interested in those things, we'll get the details nailed down here as quickly as possible. I'll point out to everybody that Colorado Springs area is one of the most beautiful areas in the country. So it's right at the base of Pikes Peak and Cheyenne Mountain, and right down the street, or, you know, not too far from the Royal Gorge. It's a beautiful place to take an extra couple of days if you have the time and inclination. So anyway, wrap up for the day, and Master Moody, give me a minute or two and give me a call, and we'll make those other connections we need to do today.
Sound good.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.